Hello and welcome to the Region Agri podcast, the go-to place to hear everything related to regenerative agriculture. Region Agri is an initiative supported by farms, agribusinesses and the supply chain in their transition to regenerative approaches. We offer global capability with the aim of securing the health of the land and the wealth of those who live on it. For more information about our initiative and to find out more about how we can help you with your regenerative journey, please visit regionagri.org. I'm your host, Rose Riley, and once again, I'm excited to bring you the latest developments in the global phenomenon that is regenerative agriculture. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Anna Nicod, Head of Climate Change Strategy at global commodity merchant Ecom Agro Industrial, and Boris Spassky, co-founder of Green Pods, France's largest regenerative agriculture almond farm project. Anna, Boris and I will discuss how leading merchant Ecom Agro Industrial is working with its coffee, cocoa and cotton supply chains to substantiate regenerative agriculture claims, and how the Green Pods farm project is working to regenerate almond supply chains from the ground up. Welcome to you both, and thank you for joining me on the podcast today.
Hi, Rose. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Hello, Rose.
So to start, would you like to introduce yourselves and provide our listeners with some background to your roles and your interest in regenerative agriculture? Boris, if you could go first.
Sure. Well, I'm the co-founder of Green Pods. Green Pods was founded in 2020 with Martin d'Archambault, my partner. So I've spent most of my career in agriculture working at the intersection between rural development and commodity trading. Prior to founding Green Pods with Martin, I worked as the investment director of the Land Degradation Neutrality Fund, which was a UNCCD-backed fund. And prior to that, I did a stint with Ecom, actually, in Central Asia and various geographies.
Fantastic. Thank you. And Anna?
Yes, so I have been at Ecom for the past 2 years. So I started up the carbon department here. And for those who don't know Ecom, so Ecom is a commodity trading merchant. We trade coffee, cotton and cocoa, nuts and other ingredients. And within our team, we are working on the decarbonization strategy for our scopes 1, 2 and 3. So for all the commodities. And with that means we are working on carbon projects and also carbon credits in order to boost community livelihoods and provide further economic incentives to farmers. Previously to that, I was working at Nestle. I touched on various topics and my experience there, from social life cycle assessments to implementing energy efficiencies in factories, and finally embedding sustainability across products and sites. So working in this part of the supply chain means that we have more connection to the farmers on the ground, which means we have full visibility and ability to support and implement on regenerative agricultural practices together with our producers.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much. And so I'm interested, Anna, in knowing at Ecom what regenerative agriculture means to you and what the drivers and challenges are in your regenerative journey.
Yeah, so I mean, the concept of regenerative agriculture is very different depending on who you talk to, whether it's our customers or other stakeholders in our value chain. And this is something that is ever evolving. And since it's quite a broad term, there are topics within regenerative agriculture that some will pick up on more than others in terms of how we implement it or measure it or track it. So it's clear that regenerative agriculture has an impact on corporate emissions. So I look at this from a carbon standpoint, since I work in carbon, and it can reduce emissions at farm level to a certain extent. More importantly, I see regenerative agriculture as a way to create more resilience against climate events. But for us, it's really nothing new. It's another way of talking about sustainability. As I said, it's really looking at practices that we've been looking at already from just general farming practices. So if we look at interventions within water, biodiversity and soil. So it's a restructuring of how we talk about sustainability and how we approach these challenges. So it's a topic that we've been working on naturally, and climate change has been impacting our supply chain. So it's really a natural way to both mitigate the impacts of climate change and as well as adapt to it.
Thank you. And Boris, from your perspective as a producer, could you answer the same question? What does regenerative agriculture mean to you, and what have been the main drivers and challenges?
Yeah, so just to get things back into context, we are a region ag farm developer. We're just servicing the growing demand for plant-based products. And our first farm, La Grange in Toulouse, is France's largest organic almond orchard to have the label Bas Carbone, with 4,000 tons of emission reductions. And we are the first farm to get Region Agri certified in France. This was in 2022. So I'd like to start with to describe what is not really regenerative. And this is what we saw when we started leasing that farm. In 2020, during lockdown, we came across La Grange, which was a farm that was devoted to conventional corn monocropping for 30 years, exporting its production to Spain's pork industry. These pigs were then sent to fattening stations, to the slaughterhouse, and then shipped back to France to the supermarket. And we thought that this was maybe a rather obsolete agro-economic use. Yeah, it provided us with a pretty bad carbon baseline because you had a lot of emissions related to transport. So we've managed to secure the farm. And basically what we've done, if we started converting it to organic immediately by rotating soy, buckwheat, sunflower, spelt, winter oats, and of course applying the principles of a broadly accepted definition of regional ag, which is less pesticide and fertilizer use, less water use, more biodiversity, and better incomes at the farm. So we've planted 17,000 trees, organic almond trees, and we believe that if you do so, if you convert a farm that was basically feeding cattle or, in this particular case, pigs to a plant-based farm that will feed the local population, you do, one, increase local food security by producing and selling locally. And in this sense, you contribute to a sustainable development goal, which is zero hunger, SDG2. You help mitigate climate change by sequestering CO2. Tree crops, we often forget it, but orchards do sequester CO2, less than forest, of course, but it's still positive. And this helps you adapt as well because the climate frontier is moving north. We've seen the olive oil industry in Spain having trouble in Cordoba or Jaén this year. And we think, of course, many tree crops will move further north in France. And then, last but not least, you do restore biodiversity. You help protect and our resources. And land degradation neutrality is defined as a state in which the quantity and quality of land that provides ecosystem services remain stable or increase. And by making that soil more healthy, because after 30 years of intensive monocropping, we just had pretty heavy compaction soil. The soil was depleted. We had very little organic matter in the soil.
Thank you. It's really interesting to hear your different perspectives on it, coming at it from quite different ends of the industry and the supply chain. Anna, you mentioned brands are using regenerative agriculture as another way to talk about sustainability. How do you ensure the credibility of regenerative agriculture claims?
There are certain certifications that have added a Regen Ag component. And within those questionnaires, it's listing some practices where we identify what is being done. For instance, you know, percentage of area that is renovated. And at Ecom, we have our internal team, Sustainable Management Services, which is basically 1,500 field technicians on the ground, which work directly with producers to improve farming practices and to make their lives more prosperous. In that relationship, we're also collecting data. So some of that data is with regards to regenerative agricultural practices. So when we look at regenerative agricultural practices, we look at it from a management perspective, management practice perspective, meaning we want to measure it and we want to track the changes. It's not only about improving environmental performance, but we also want to improve the social and economic performance of the producers. So the prospect of continuous improvement and measuring reductions is what is currently lacking, in my opinion, and in the discourse of regenerative agriculture. So for instance, like I said, we talk about surveys on soil conservation activities being carried out, but there's no questions related to MRV, which is critical for assessing the impacts. So we need a baseline of measurements and continuous monitoring so that we can demonstrate the positive impacts of regenerative farming. And I would like to see certifications offer more training to farmers so that they can implement more regenerative farming, because it's also a completely new way of looking at farming in order to help adapt to the changing climatic conditions.
Thank you. And Boris, do you have a perspective on how to ensure credibility within regenerative agriculture claims?
Of course, I think you do need certification. And this is what I quite like, is that you're being audited against a thorough set of criteria, because these days Regen Agri is the hype. Everyone is discussing it. And of course, this means that there is a risk of a greenwashing. And if you've got a surveyor that comes into the field and checks several points, I think it provides credibility. So when you make sustainability claims, you need to back them. And certification, of course, certification is never perfect, but it's one way to back your claims. It's very important when you talk to procurement departments, because you can't just go to a procurement department if you want to. It's a long process. If you sell almonds, coffee, you need to have a pre-shipment sample approval. You need to show certificates of origin, many things. And that's one of the ways. So I think it might not get you a price advantage that many people, for example, in organic, do it for the price. but it provides you with a transactional advantage in the sense that it will allow you to trade with more trustworthy counterparties. You build trust. You're making progress in your supply chain. And it's an exercise of self-improvement, I think, because when we got audited by Region Agri, so we opened a data room, then we had a field visit, and maybe I can take a few examples, but then the auditor came and looked at different points in the report, and for example, check the conservation areas. So we have 7% of conservation areas at the farm in the form of forest. You look at cover cropping. This is one of the key practices in Region Ag. Tillage. The auditor checked that we don't till, of course, because once we plant almond trees in between rows, we plant fava beans or winter oats, and then we just shred it and leave it in the soil, and it does actually increase soil organic matter levels after a while. Then, of course, they checked crop rotation. They checked our irrigation practices and saw that we converted from pivot irrigation to drip irrigation with sensors and probes. At the end, it adds a level of, it refines the analysis because we are certified with organic, but organic is purely, it's binary. Do you use chemical products, synthetic fertilizer or pesticides or not? We don't use them, but you could perfectly be organic and be in a complete monocultural system. So I think it is powerful. It makes, it does help to improve the standards.
Thank you. And I know you've both got an interest in carbon accounting. Carbon accounting and carbon credits is a topic that's also interesting to many of our listeners, but it can be complex to navigate. So could you both give an overview of how it differs working with various supply chains and crops and how they work at farm level?
I could give the example of the French carbon system because tree crops in developing countries have been able to generate carbon credits with various different systems, VCS, now called Vera. But maybe let's get back to Europe because we've got a Green Deal going on. And it's interesting that in this sense, France has been paving the way for a carbon farming system. The French government has launched the label Bas Carbone in 2020. And this is a way for farmers to monetize good practices at the farm. And so it incentivizes them to implement these practices. The system had one core objective: for France to meet its climate commitments that it took at the Paris Accords at COP21. The second objective is, of course, to help farmers achieve better revenues. They can monetize these practices and some corporates can contribute to the project. So the Label Bas Carbone has designed four methodologies: row crops, tree crops, cattle and hedges. And they've all been validated and enforced by the Ministries of Environment and Agriculture. So the methodology for tree crops is fully operational. I think we're one of the first farms to get certified. And project developers either choose to go through an intermediary, through a broker that does all the calculations on the project. We did this on our own because it's not so complex when you start from a really bad baseline, which was intensive corn. And you just have to calculate, basically, you have to enter the number of trees you plant, the spacing, the densities, and punch in the liters of diesel use and a few other things about energy. So Greenpath has chosen to do it directly to retain title of goods. And today we see pricing levels in France around 50 to 70 euros per ton of CO2. There is a lack of bankable projects. So that's what many people claim of serious and traceable carbon projects. You've had a few scandals in the Amazon with Red Plus. So many corporates in France, at least, are keen to finance contributions that are within a 3-hour train range, because it does bring a lot of trust that you can actually go see the project and check it, as opposed to something that's really far flung.
Thank you. And Anna, from your perspective?
Decarbonization is a priority for us, and we can't reach our global commitments without also investing beyond the value chain. So for me, a reduction or removal, no matter how it's accounted for or under what scheme, whether it's the SBTI way or carbon credit scheme, however it's listed or sold or not sold, is secondary to the fact that we need to reduce our impacts and adapt to the changing climate. So yes, it is considered a tricky topic, carbon credits, because it's easy to get bogged down on the accounting aspect of carbon. So it's not only carbon credits, but just generally speaking, when we make claims on carbon. So, you know, who has the right to claim? Was it bought as a credit or was it bought with regards to the offtake of a commodity? Who invested in the carbon asset, meaning who paid for the tree? So all of these are very important questions in order to help our customers claim the reduction or the removal. So regardless of these challenges, credit is one type of mechanism that we can use to help deliver carbon reductions and removals and also provide the economic incentives to farmers. And we don't really have time to go into the intricacies of how we should go about this. But another debate is whether we should be looking at this from a carbon perspective or just generally speaking from a farm management perspective, because transitioning to regenerative agriculture takes about 4 years on average to reach the equilibrium of farm production. And these costs need to somehow be covered. And so all of this, I mean, we hear this very often, but we still need to keep going. We still need to work together with our producers and other supply chain actors to reduce the impact. So if we look at it from like crop perspective, so there's some commodities that I would say are more ready to go the SBTI route in claiming carbon versus doing carbon credits. And one of the prerequisites in order to determine which road you want to go down is, for instance, the complexity of the supply chain. So if a customer does not have traceability to the farm, it's going to be difficult to make claims with regards to the commodity that you're sourcing. So for some brands, step one is really to fix the traceability and then implement reduction and removal practices at farm level and claim it on the commodity. And where we don't have this, then we would look into the carbon credit route, because it doesn't mean just because we don't have this in check, we shouldn't at least try to do something at a regional level or supply shed level. So at least we get going whilst we figure that out. So whether it's carbon credits or reductions in removals within our farm boundaries, a core element of carbon accounting is also collecting quality primary data in order to assess the impacts. So at Ecom, for instance, we can collect this primary data, and also we can monitor the carbon impacts on the ground. And we do this by, for instance, we have developed our own internal calculator to quantify farm impacts on the ground, aligning to the best industry standards of GHG reporting. So this is why, because of the visibility and the footprint that we have on the ground with our SMS team, it's really important in supporting us to get the relevant data in order to define the right roadmaps and the right interventions per farm.
Thank you. And in working with the community crops like cocoa, coffee and tree nuts, what KPIs are relevant to the various supply chains, and how is agriculture a tool to provide improvements against those KPIs?
Yeah, so KPIs are a good indicator to use for sustainability reporting, obviously. However, what's lacking in the context of certification, in my opinion, is what I mentioned before, which is the need for proper measuring and implementation of continuous improvement practices together with the producers. So when we hire new field technicians and agronomists, we're really looking for a different type of profile of agronomist, someone with specific understanding of regenerative agriculture and that has prior experience in that producing country, because practices can vary depending on the profile, the landscape, the crop, the size, economic means, et cetera, of the farmer. So using the indicators under the regenerative agriculture definition is going to have an impact on our climate strategy, as it also helps us to reduce our emissions. So there's not only one way to make regenerative agricultural claims, and there's no one size fit all. And I know that this is, you know, something we hear very often. And one of the sentences that I hear very often in my team, which now we try to avoid, is saying it depends, because it's so context specific. It's just a way of working now that it really depends on the context of where you are. So for instance, just to give an example, we're not going to implement heavy agroforestry systems to transition large coffee farms in Brazil, for example, because it doesn't work there. But it would probably be more appropriate to do that in different archetype farms that have smaller hectares.
And Boris, in your experience, how does regenerative agriculture provide an opportunity to bring stakeholders and communities together?
Farming with regenerative practices allows you to attract new people to projects. It allows you to attract the best from the existing agricultural world and new profiles as well and new candidates. So agriculture today isn't an attractive job for young people in France. I don't know. This is the way it is, and because half of the farming population is reaching 60 years old by 2030, it's increasingly difficult to replace them because you've got unsociable hours. It's hard work. But if you do actually invest massively and farm well, your relationship with the local community, the stakeholders, with the city hall, your relationship gets much better. There's a sense of belonging. People work for a common goal, for a project. The young generation, I'm 44, but still consider myself young, but every single graduate in France today is concerned about climate. So we've managed to recruit a really strong team with experience working in orchards. And I think the fact that it was one of the pioneering RegenAg projects in France did help a lot. We collaborate with Purpan, which is a local agricultural engineering school in Toulouse. We've got students coming, working as volunteers to do some bird counting. We've got some professors coming with earthworm counting. We plant hedgerows.
And have you seen any examples of regenerative agriculture helping to build climate resilience in your farms?
Indeed. Again, let's start with a baseline. Agriculture is a major cause of climate change. We all know it. It's being responsible for 25% of greenhouse gas emissions today. We have roughly 1.3 billion hectares available on this planet to feed the world population. And we degrade 12 million hectares a year through intensive monocropping, overgrazing, deforestation. For example, in France, we import alone more than 4 million tons of soy. It comes from land that's usually been cleared. Same with almonds. We import almonds from California. We know that they have environmental issues. And the system just won't work any longer this way. And to fix it, we have two levers, supply and demand. And this is where agriculture brings a hope out of the climate crisis. On the demand side, you have one main lever, because we all know that 90% of our arable land is devoted to row crops, and more than 50% is allocated to cattle feed. So we need to, on the demand side, to convert our diets. We need to change our diets and have more plant-based diets and eat more locally, eat more local food to relieve pressure on land. And on the supply side, it's very simple. We must transition to a system that stops depleting our resource and instead restores the water cycle, the CO2 cycle. And that starts basically, instead of depleting resources, that starts providing ecosystem services. At the farm, the example is quite simple. How we help build climate resilience: by planting cover crops, you create a carbon sink. We never leave the soil bare. We have reduced tillage. All our pruning residues are ground into the soil instead of being burnt. And all these practices increase soil organic carbon, and therefore you increase your water retention capacity. You've got less runoff. In case of heavy rains, you get no floods. It helps restore the water cycle. So I think it's pretty obvious that RegenAg strongly contributes to climate resilience.
Thank you. Anna, from your perspective, do you have any examples of regenerative agriculture increasing the climate resilience in your supply chains?
Yes, I'll talk about one example that I was privileged enough to go see in person. So it was on my trip to Costa Rica last year. We went to go see some incredible coffee farms, really the best in class. And so this particular farm that we were looking at, so it's a farm that's managed by our SMS division in Costa Rica, and it's been transitioning to become regenerative. And it's really interesting to hear about their experience. So one of the practices, for example, on mitigative measures that they've taken is to renovate the coffee farms with better varieties, for instance, that are higher yielding, that are more resistant. They also made sure that they put a diversity of shade trees and also planted at different times so that you also have different heights of the trees so that shade can get in at all times of the day and not just full cover shade, because if it's too much shade, then of course it's going to impact your yield. And also, it's important to think about planting multi-species of trees and not just, you know, banana trees. So with that, for example, you're increasing biodiversity, which is fundamental to regenerative agriculture, which can bring, for example, more insects and birds. And so in this example that I was sharing with you here, I don't remember off the top of my head the name of the bird, but there's a bird that comes and it feeds on the major coffee plantation pest, coffee borer beetle. So that reduces the risk of decreasing the yields due to infection. So the benefits of agroforestry, I think it's very clear. It helps to maintain humidity, and water in the soil, for example. Another practice that we were looking at that they were implementing is the reduction of herbicides. And so that would allow the regrowth of native weeds. So it's also important that they select the right type of weeds, you know, for example, with shorter stems. And this is for the purpose of covering the soil. So when you do that, you reduce also the temperatures in the soils. You also increase the nitrogen fixing organisms. So yeah, these are just a few of the practices that they've implemented. But, you know, some of the trade-offs with this is, you know, we do reduce herbicide application. However, that would require more hand labor to maintain the weeds. So often switching to more regenerative agricultural practices means that you're increasing the costs of management. Ultimately, transitioning to regenerative agriculture will not only make us more resilient to climate change, but it also increases biodiversity and also improves water management. So it's really like a domino effect of benefits.
That's wonderful. Thank you. To close, what one piece of advice would you give to businesses aiming to be more regenerative, Anna?
I would say not one size fits all for regenerative agricultural practices and what you will do in the farms that you are looking at. Farming in a regenerative way needs to be tailored to the geographical area and considering various environmental factors. However, we know that it works. We know that it's having an impact on carbon. But for me, the main driver for implementing Regen Ag is really to enable the producers to become more resilient. So it's also ensuring the survival and the sustainability in the long term. What I advise is if you're interested in doing regenerative agriculture with us, then you speak to our procurement, which then link them to our sustainability colleagues. And there, that's how we work with our clients to tailor projects that are specific to their origins they're sourcing from.
Thank you. And Boris, do you have any advice for businesses aiming to become more regenerative?
Indeed, I think you've got lots of financiers today looking at Regen Ag, and they tend to look at service providers evolving around Regen Ag. They want to find spectral analysis, input providers, pest control solutions, robotics. I think that given the state of agriculture in Europe, we need to have a kind of Marshall Plan. And what we must do is channel funding through primary production operations. And this is where the risk lies. But it's if we can send people to the moon, I think it's doable to finance agricultural operation that will become profitable. And I think this is what we need. So my key advice is for all corporates who actually contribute through funds or through projects is to finance primary production operations as opposed to service providers. Because if you only finance the service providers who are all servicing the primary producer and you don't finance the primary producer, he will never be able to afford all these services. So I think for me, this is key.
Thank you so much. And how can people stay up to date with Econ, Anna?
Well, we are a B2B company, so a lot of the information flows go through our colleagues. So it's really depending on the person you're talking to. However, we have been putting more effort on our communication. So LinkedIn is a very good channel where you can get some information on beautiful examples of what we're doing with regenerative agriculture and various types of projects.
Thank you. And how can people stay up to date with GreenPod?
You can follow us on LinkedIn. Our website as well will be upgraded as we are scaling across the Pyrenees in Spain. One day, hopefully, we'll have an Instagram account once the harvests become a bit more significant.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you both so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining me today on the Regen Agri podcast. To learn more about Econ Agro-Industrial and GreenPods, please find the relevant links in the show notes. If you would like to know more about how Regen Agri can help you on your regenerative journey, from advisory services and monitoring of on-farm data to regenerative certification and carbon verification, please visit regenagri.org. You can also check out our case studies and articles and gain access to our digital hub for free insight and advice via the Regen Agri website. Alternatively, follow us on X, previously known as Twitter, or Instagram at regenagri_org. Or search for Regen Agri on LinkedIn.